We use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us because what we say is in them is in them because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine, shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA Unlock LeaderShield and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Here in Pennsylvania, we're proud of our breeding program, the best in North America. But we're also proud to be leaders in this industry. The PA Horse Breeders Association is funding cutting-edge research at Penn Vet to detect gene doping in thoroughbreds. And we endorse the SAFE Act to help protect the most vulnerable horses. Plus, we're pleased to support the aftercare programs set up by our horsemen's groups. Just a few of the reasons why you should join us in Pennsylvania, the premier place to breed and race.
At the races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back about 5 minutes into hour two on this weekend preview at the races presented by Twin Spires. And you know what else is presented by Twin Spires? Scott Shapiro.
What's up, Steve? How you doing?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm good.
Well, we wanted to catch up and get into the weekend and actually looked ahead earlier with KK toward big Foster action. My inclination is to say Foster Night, but it won't be a night version of Foster next week. But in the meantime, Scott, this is particularly the stake tomorrow is really interesting, part of the cross-country pick five. And I was anxious. I said I wanted to hear Kevin and Scott and Scully's opinion on this Chicago tomorrow.
Yeah, it came up really strong, especially for a grade three in a day where a lot of the top runners in divisions are able to sidestep each other until the big grade ones, but not the case in this grade three Chicago seven furlongs, of course, over the main track. And you've got the rivalry of Bell's the One and Sconson reunited for the first time this year. Bell's the One coming off a fourth place finish in the Derby City Distaff. Sconson taking on Lesser and getting the job done in workmanlike fashion, pretty much, in the winning colors, although the time came back fast. The number did not. It was a fast track that day. I have a lot of respect for both them. I think Lady Rocket's a tiny bit dangerous on the front end. You've got Byerness, who beat only two rivals in the Roxalana, but has shown an affinity for this racetrack. But I'm going to give a chance to Penny Baker in here, Steve. Pretty good price. I was just ultra impressed visually and everything about the Heavenly Cause at Laurel on April 16th. And I know it was lesser competition, but by no means was it a bad field. And it was 12 rivals, first try over the dirt for the Godolphin Homebred. And while she'll have to move inside after an outside stalking trip, I just think she's going to get completely overlooked in here. And I don't want to say that Bell's the One and Sconson aren't as good as they were, but I don't think they're going to be better this year, especially Bell's the One. Maybe Sconson can move forward. But with Sconson, I've always been a little concerned about the 7/8 of a mile. She can do it, but I think she's better at 6. And Bell's the One, I just thought, Steve, that she should have finished a little bit stronger in the Derby City Distaff. I know that was a grade one event, strong field, but the pace was more contentious than we thought that day on paper. And Obligatory came from the back, and Just One Time was fast early. She couldn't get by that one, and she couldn't get by Four Graces. So maybe she'll appreciate, you know, a little bit of a freshening, but I'm just not convinced that one of the two big dogs, if you will, Bell's the one in Wisconsin have to win, and I think Lady Rocket, a little bit dressed up, although she could be loose. So I'm going to take a little bit of a shot, Penny Baker, 8-1.
Yeah, and she's, you know, she is the mystery player in here, obviously, and the one that is unexposed. And frankly, that first dirt try at Laurel in the Heavenly Cause, and of course, people that might not watch Laurel's action, that's a one-turn mile. So in terms of configuration, it's not like she's doing something, and she was very effective, you know, going middle sprint distances, 6.5, 7, 7.5 when she was in France. She's a very interesting player in here. And, of course, her dam, in fact, the whole, you know, from the breeding standpoint, it did make sense that she would take to the dirt. So she is the fresh face.
Yeah, and like I said, I mean, I just think that given all the price options, I don't know if she's going to get completely overlooked. You know, if you watch that race and you see she's won 5 in a row, but you know that the horses that have done their best running here at Churchill will take the lion's share of the money. So I was impressed. I think could get the right trip, and the slight cutback is never a negative to me in these one-turn races.
Yeah, and, you know, I would also add that from a pace standpoint, she feels like she's tactical, you know, that when you realize that Lady Rocket is going to be to her outside, who's obviously going to go, and Baroness, I'm sure Louis Saez, having drawn the rail, wants to get some position, but you would think that James Graham, who let's face it, is thought of more as a turf jock, you would think that he's going to gain some sort of position himself, and, you know, look for maybe an inside out trip. I Penny Baker's fun, and I'm glad we talked about her.
Yeah, I think hopefully we'll save ground early, like you said, probably mid pack, maybe a little closer. I think, like you said, she's tactical. I think based on that effort, at least at Laurel, she, you know, kind of caught in a weird spot at first and then was tactical enough to kind of work out that perfect outside stalking trip. But, you know, it's a class check and shipping in and whatnot. All these other horses, for the most part, running out of their own barn. But I think the price will be right to gamble.
The key to this race is where the pace pressure is going to come from, and who's going to keep Lady Rocket company. Because if she's left to her own devices, she could be tough to reel in. Calypso, from that standpoint, it'd be interesting to see if Calypso can, you know, kind of find her. You know, her speed legs, as it were, her running shoes that she showed earlier in her career. Because I, other than that, I don't see who is going to necessarily, you know, put any pressure. I mean, obviously, Wisconsin and Bell's the one. I mean, they just don't have any early speed at all. I suppose Leperoux is going to want to stay in contact, but, you know, Four Graces isn't known for, you know, for pace pressure. So if it's not Calypso, then Graham or Louis Saez are going to have to take up the chase early and get involved. Otherwise, Lady Rocket's gone.
Yeah, there is definitely an outside chance of that happening. Maybe a better than outside, maybe I should say. But
yeah,
you would think Calypso is going to have to try to put pressure on her. You know, what is she in the race for? But maybe she's just not as fast. I mean, Four Graces used to have that tactical foot, but hasn't quite of late. But she does get out of the gate very well regularly. So Le Perroux, definitely not a guy that you'll think of is going to be all out to keep pressure on anyone. But hopefully one of the two of them. But either way, I think Penny Baker should get a good trip. And, you know, at the price, you can afford to maybe play her underneath and some exactas as a backup.
Yeah, 8-1 going in, and fun edition of this Chicago. I keep wanting to call it the Chicago Handicap because I'm pretty sure it was a handicap for a long, long time.
I'm falling the same trap, yes.
it's the fourth leg of the cross country. The cross country, again, for those that haven't looked at it yet, the Mother Goose starts it at 4:40. The Monmouth race is the Goldwood at 4:47. Then you're going to have to quickly turn your attention into Thistledown and the Lady Jacqueline at 4:48. Another 7 minutes to the Chicago at 4:55, and then you get a breather until the Ohio Derby at 5:35. But this all is going to be over in 55 minutes.
Yeah, that's a fun one. That's a fun one. And I do like Tawny Port as a single in there to close it out in the Ohio Derby. I think this horse is moving in the right direction. I think he meets a field of horses that I respect, but don't necessarily think are moving in the right direction. I think Tawny Port is the play in there. Hopefully we'll get 3-1 or higher, but I'll be on Tawny Port in the Ohio Derby.
Very good. All right, what else this weekend? What are we looking at?
Let's see. We'll backing up a little bit, we'll go to race 5. Twilight Blue was good to us last time. We're not going to quite get 9.5 to 1, but as the second choice against Folsom and the rest of this crew in this $148,000 allowance event at 1/16, I think Twilight Blue sits another perfect stalking trip and gets the job done there at 3-1, getting the jump on Folsom, who hasn't been seen since an underwhelming effort in the Ali Sheba, kind of a horse for Brad Cox that needs the right competition and needs the right setup when he gets it. It's pretty tough, but I do think Twilight Blue's in great form, so I'll take my chances with the second choice in a pretty fun race there. You could argue borderline stakes comp-like level race. The purse certainly is stakes level purse. And then race 7, maiden special weight event that starts the late pick 4, second leg of that late pick 5 that you spoke of. I like Badge Ball, Steve, number 5 here for Greg Foley, Camaro Partners. Just a couple of fifth-place efforts as a 2-year-old, but I thought they were better than looks, especially the October 2nd effort. Greg Foley was patient with this one, gave some time. It's been working really well here at Churchill. And gets LASIK for the first time, and I don't think the ones that the recency edge here or the first timers are all that much. So Badge Ball for me at 4-1 in race 7, one of several maiden races on the Saturday card. And in race 8, my best bet of the day comes in that, and I like Surveillance getting back to the main track, stretching back out to 7 furlongs for Keith DeSormo. I thought it was a good effort over the turf on May 28th. I thought 21-3 was a little bit much for this one to be chasing. Passed some tired horses that day, but I do think this horse is a third horse in the end. And with the right setup, which I think he gets in here, should save ground. So we'll hope for a big late part of the card from James Graham, who, in addition to riding Pennybacker, rides Surveillance.
Very good. So Pennybacker in the 9th, the 2, and Surveillance in the 8th, the 1, Badge Ball, the 5, in the 7th, and Twilight Blue, the 5th, and the start of the Derby City Pick 6. And then Tawny Port, who's the 7 in the Ohio Derby, that closes out the Derby Day card in Cleveland. All right.
I'll give you a long shot play for today. Maybe we can get lucky with in race 7. 1/16, maiden special weight. Couple of big favorites on the morning line in here. Pioneering Spirit, who just missed last time for Todd Pletcher, has had 8 chances. Maybe the blinkers move forward in speed bias, 8-5 for Brad Cox. Trying, stretching out off the disqualification at Oakland back on April 30th. But Bourbon on Fire in here is interesting to me, Steve. I think he's had absolutely no chance in either of his last 2 starts. The first one of this year was June 5th over the turf here, and he was squeezed badly at the start, was very wide into the first turn, never really got a fair run of it. And then in his dirt trial on October 9th, which ended his 2-year-old campaign, he was off slow that day, was wide that day as well, and the rail was very good at Keeneland back on October 9th when he raced. So I just think he's better than he looks. I thought he looked good warming up and in the paddock before his first start of the year last time out. And Brian Hernandez Jr., who could have rode Wolf County or Scotland Yard, at least was on those 2 last time out, both given better chances on the morning line, opts to ride this one, which I found interesting as well. So we'll try Bourbon on Fire in race 7 as our play today at 12-1.
Very good. Bourbon on Fire. I love it. The three in here, the seventh race, 350 post. Ian Wilkes and Brian Hernandez Jr.
I'm yes,
just glancing around this card. This is our card's all right today.
It's challenging. I had a hard time. Always know when it's challenging when I have a hard time kind of picking a likeliest winner. You know, it's one of those cards where don't have a super strong opinion to lean on anybody. But I think if you're one of those people that like to go, you know, 3-4 deep in a number of races, pick 4, pick 5, pick 3, or maybe, you know, use the ABC method, of course, for ticket making, I do think there's some chance, more so than the last couple of cards, for a little bit of a good payday in some of these horizontal wagers.
Excellent. Excellent. Scott, it's been a great, great season. I'm off next week for vacation. We'll be up at Indiana on Indiana Derby Day, so maybe we'll do a little capping on the 8th. But thanks for everything. Thanks for a great Churchill season, and we'll touch base during the summer, get some isolated Shap action.
Sounds great. I might be up at Indiana. That's a TBD. We'll see how it goes, and might be doing some Twin Spires work up there. That remains to be seen. But yeah, enjoy the week off, and appreciate everything, and look forward to the second half of the year.
Well, I mean, if you're coming to Indianapolis, then Shapiro at Shapiro's has to happen.
I knew you were going to say that. That's a plan.
Exactly.
Long overdue for the Shapiro's trip.
I love it. Are you, and I forgot to ask, I've said it after KK wrapped up, but inside the Downs tonight?
Yeah, inside Churchill Downs tonight from 6 to 7, as always, ESPNLouisville.com. If you're not in the area, we'll have both Greg Foley and then Neil Pessin on to talk about their respective horses in the Chicago show. So it should be a real fun show, and we'll go through the later part of the Saturday card and handicap that when we're done with the two great trainers.
Well, that'll be a lot of fun. And Foley's unconscious. It's unbelievable. Everything sending him is live. Big time.
Yep. They're running well. So,
Scott Shapiro, everybody. Thanks, buddy.
Thanks, Steve.
Scott Shapiro, 34 on your Twitter dial. We'll stay here. We're 20 minutes in. Dave Grenning is going to join us. And we did not talk with everything that was going on in the aftermath of Belmont Week. Didn't get a chance to talk to Dave last week. So we'll kind of have a compendium here of conversation with the biggest day, of course, of the Belmont season, but yet some, you know, important racing to come at Belmont, including the Mother Goose. Not just the Mother Goose either. There's also they were uncertain whether the Wild Applause was going to go tomorrow, but they let it go with 5. And Chad, heavy presence in there with 3, and then Bill Mott and Christophe Clement, Oakhurst, Al Kahira, Lakota Spirit, Breezy Z, and Eminent Victor, and Eminent Victor, your 9-5 favorite, but Breezy Z 2-1, Oakhurst 5-2. But the Mother Goose, as we talked yesterday at the end of the visit with Todd Pletcher, with Shahama as the 9-5 second choice, Juju's Map, Even Money, Gerrymander for Chad, and Venti Valentine, 5-1 for George Abreu, and Midnight Stroll, the longer of the shots of the 5-pack. So 2 5 horse stakes. Certainly the Mother Goose, though, well matched, and as the opening leg of the cross country pick 5, not going to be all that easy. And as you can tell from our conversation, I mean, we haven't really delved into, we'll do with James, into the Thistledown action. But, you know, the Ohio Derby, there's 3 or 4 in there that feel eligible. The Lady Jacqueline. And then there's the turf sprint, like any other turf sprint in Monmouth, that's tricky. So ticket building is not going to be simple for this cross country. A little bit of a challenge. Well, all right, Case, if Dave, if Dave, he might be, you know, he's on the backstretch, if he's involved in a conversation, but he's not. He's involved in the conversation with us, because here's Dave Grinning.
Hi, Steve. How are you? Sorry about that. I was just finishing up an interview.
No, I figured. I was about to say the case that, you know, if Dave was not picking up, it was because he was still doing something. Because you would, I could tell from your earlier tweet this morning or text this morning that you had something planned for 10. So glad we get you. And I wanted to kind of have a first half of the year wrap up discussion with you. I'll be on vacation. And when we come back, we'll pretty much be on top of Saratoga. So kind of a nice way to wrap up the Belmont spring season.
How to wrap up the Belmont spring season? Been, you know, mixed bag. I mean, we've seen some really nice horses here. We just haven't seen many horses here. It's a bit concerning when every stakes race, while it has a nice horse, like a Flightline or a Latruska or whatever it might be your fancy, has five. And that, to me, is a very bad trend. I was talking to someone earlier today about, you know, we were talking about life is good in the neighborhood and, like, who was going to run against him. And I was like, well, what's ever happened to the sportsmanship part of the game? I mean, don't you want to take on the best horses and see where you fit in? And what's the worst thing that can happen? You win, or the second worst thing you happen is you run second and you make $50,000. I mean, I bet Uriah St. Louis a couple of weeks ago, Belmont Day, he ran last in two stakes races. He made $70,000. What did you make? You know, as an owner, you know, fearful of running against the horse because you couldn't beat him, you made nothing. You just paid a bill and complained about it. So I just wish there was a little bit more sportsmanship, you know, and not have to struggle every day to fill a stakes race. I know that's not what you were really looking for here, but as far as the racing itself, I mean, I think we've set ourselves up for a nice second half in the three-year-old division. A lot of nice performances, a lot of good horses still out there to sort of prove themselves, and hopefully the Travers at Saratoga brings together the three Triple Crown race winners. And maybe even a horse like Jack Christopher, if they're so bold to try him a mile and a quarter, pending what he does in the Haskell, right? So that has the potential to be a very fun race. I don't know what my car's made of, but I just knocked my car, and hopefully they show up there.
And you know, this is obviously this has been a conversation when it comes to the stakes issues that you know, has permeated the. I won't say the Triple Crown season, but at least post Derby, just because of what transpired in the Preakness and then subsequently at Belmont. I mean, frankly, it did not take away and maybe you can sound off on this. In the final analysis, when we went back last week, Dave, and we're, you know, looking at the payouts and some of the multi-race wagering opportunities, it really turned out that even though there were spotty, smallish fields, there were still plenty of opportunities to be successful as a player and to, you know, to really make real money. So, you know, sometimes the anticipation of these scenarios is overwhelming the actual results and what ends up happening on the oval. You know, then you fold in we could maybe compare. I mean, they're not as accomplished because they're three-year-olds, but let's compare the Mother Goose tomorrow to what happened in the Phipps last week. And you know, with that Phipps was as fabulous a race that we'll be referring back to the rest of the year. These are a really nice group of three-year-old fillies. There's just five of them, though. But still, I don't know how much other cannon fodder is going to be necessary.
Well, I mean, there's a chance that could scratch down to four. In fact, after I speak to you, I'm going to go see John Terranova and Midnight Stroll with the late entrance to the race, and I'm not 1,000% sure she runs. But there again, you know, look, there has to be a scheduling meeting at some point in time. I don't, you know, look, Heisa has a lot to do. I'm not sure they're going to get involved with this, and it certainly wouldn't get involved with it right away. But you can't, it's asking a lot to have, what do we have? The Mother Goose, the Boiling Springs, which up until about a minute ago I thought was on turf, but now it's on dirt now. The Iowa Oaks, the Indiana Oaks, the Delaware Oaks, I mean, all within 2 weeks. Where do you think all these, you know, how many horses, and the foal crop is down, what, 40% from not that long ago? So where do you think they all are? How many stakes do we have? And they're all going to be fives and sixes, unless you get some jurisdiction where someone's going to take a shot. So it's nice. As far as the Mother Goose per se goes, it's, you know, you have a nice matchup with Juju's Map, a rebounding Venti Valentine, hopefully. She's got the one bad race, which is the Oaks. We can draw a line through that. She belongs. And you have Shahama for Todd, who was, you know, everyone sort of the buzz horse, if I recall, going into Kentucky Oaks.
Yes.
And, you know, and didn't have the greatest of trips and found herself a little bit further back than she wanted to be. This is probably a good rebounding spot. And then maybe it all leads to somebody coming out of here and going up against Secret Oath and Nest in the coaching club. I mean, are you going to tell me that when you get to the Saratoga, you're not going to run because you don't want to run against Secret Oath and Nest? Don't you? Again, Saratoga's grade one. It's historical races like the coaching club and the Alabama. Don't you want to be in those races? If you have a horse good enough, maybe you're not good enough to be the favorite, but you're good enough to have a horse to be in there, take a shot. You know, just run. It's, you know, to keep your horse in the barn and not run, I don't know. I don't own them. So I don't pay the bills on them. So maybe I'm not the right guy to talk to. But it just seems like from someone observing, I would just, if you have horses, you want to run your horses.
And I know if Hammer is going to join us next hour, he touched on this a little bit on Belmont Eve, and there's some interesting theories about what's influencing the circumstances and whether it's more than horse shortage, more than fearing turning in a big effort, not really getting anything. There's plenty of consideration of what the Lasix's elimination in graded stakes has essentially, the effect of it, Dave. And maybe Hammer, we just touched on it 2 weeks ago. Maybe Hammer will expand on it this morning. So it's a real multifactorial issue. There's no doubt. Concentration of talent and, sheer numbers and sheer number of opportunities, like you just referenced. Very fair points. I mean, there's a lot of things that are going into this, which means there's no clear way of solving this problem.
There isn't. This is a sport that is very territorial. So every track, every jurisdiction is out on its own, it's all fighting for survival. So the idea of actually getting together and coming up with some sort of program that might benefit the industry, but might take away from your particular stakes program, doesn't necessarily get met with a lot of enthusiasm. So until something like that changes, then we'll be, because this isn't a new phenomenon. It's not a new problem.
No,
it's just sort of coming to the fore now, where it seems like we see more and more of this, and I guess we'll continue until something like that happens where there's a program. I know that the Mid-Atlantic region has a match series for not necessarily the grade 1/2 type of horses, and it seems to work. Or maybe I'm not paying enough attention, I'm not sure. But it does seem to have a nice series of races. Maybe there's something like that. And there used to be I know when I first started in the 90s, there was an older horse series and stuff with the added money and bonuses and whatnot. But something needs to change to see the better horses run against each other more than just, say, on Triple Crown race day or the Breeders' Cup. There's some nice races coming up, and I'm hoping the Whitney, like I would love to see, I know it's not going to happen, but I'd love to see Flight Line run against Life is Good in the Whitney, selfishly, because it's I just think it would be at a mile and eighth, those two horses running at a mile and eighth in August when they're probably in their prime condition. Flight Line doing what he did in the Met Mile, Life is Good hopefully gets to run in the Nay route if it fills. And, why wait till November to see those two run against each other at a distance that, like a mile and a quarter, may not be there, either one of them. And the Whitney, to me, would be an ideal spot. You know, I joked to Naira and they laughed at me, so I guess it was funny. You know, make the Whitney $4 or $5 million and, you know, let's get it on. I think there'd be a box office smash. You can get horses to run because if they're running for third, they get $1 million. And to me, it would be an absolute blast to watch those two run against each other first weekend of August in Saratoga. And then if they get to meet again in November, all the better. But, you know, why wait?
I like it.
But I'm good at spending other people's money, Steve.
No, that's thinking. I love it. That's thinking big. We need that. We need that. You can't. You can't change things with. I guess you can chip away at certain things, but big wholesale shifts and ideas. They can go a long way. So not a unreasonable concept. I like it. Dave, before we look ahead and touch on any other news items, I know that Matt Hegarty wrote the report, but any backstretch thoughts or any conversations about the hearing officer recommendation and essentially putting now a clock on the exclusion of Baffert entries until January of next year?
Yeah, what wasn't much of a discussion with the people I spoke to other than, I think there was a surprise, maybe a pleasant surprise, that this wasn't just a rubber stamp of what Naira had intended to do, which was a 2-year ban. And so this panel, which was kind of an oddly constructed panel, in my opinion, but that's for another day, said, okay, we think a year is fair, and we also think it's fair to include some of the time that he's already served. So in essence, it becomes a 7-month penalty, and he's basically done through this year. And, you know, he misses the Saratoga, he misses the Belmont Fall races and Cigar Mile if he were to have something good enough for it. And he can come back in January, which obviously he's not going to participate then. But I actually thought this was going to be just a rubber stamp. Naira wants 2 years. We'll give him the 2 years with maybe, a time served thing. But I think, look, is it fair? I don't know if it's fair. In light of what they were trying to do, and this sort of gets reduced a little bit, I think it's okay. I'm sure his attorneys are not going to just go quietly and say okay, even though I wish they would in this particular case. I think it's, I'll just say I was surprised pleasantly that they just couldn't rubber stamp Naira's desire for 2 years. I do think it's a little hypocritical from Naira to just focus on Bob Baffert, who has no penalty violations in New York in his career, and it's been done more good for New York racing than bad. If you're not going to go after some of these other guys, I'm not sure why it's all just thrown at Bob.
Well, there's plenty viable. There's some theories about who in which places of authority in the game have been harping for this. But what I have said is, for starters, you got the 90-day suspension that is coming towards an end here in the beginning of July for Baffert to run horses, and you're a year of the 2 years for Churchill, and here's a stop date for this situation. To me, and I think what you were referring to with the attorneys, with Craig Robertson and Clark Brewster, is this thing is almost there's an end in sight to all of this, and if Baffert is going to fix his public image and come back and start horses at any and all venues like he has for decades, he's going to have to win over people by operating an absolute pristine and perfect operation, and the sooner that commences, and you know, let him prove to everybody that is so, you know, disappointed and disgusted by all of this, the sooner it starts the other part of this ends, the better. Because every time there's one of these headlines, it just churns out the angst and you know, the anger. It's doing nobody any good at this point.
And there's nothing left to win, Steve, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I think the only thing left to win is for the owner, Radon, to try and get his Derby win. But there's no, you know, with the unfortunate passing of Medina Spirit, there's no stud deal to be made. Bob has won six Derbies, and he will have the opportunity to win more, maybe for Mr. Radon. But there's really nothing left to win here, I don't think. And to be honest with you, Steve, the people that are pro-Bob Baffert will continue to be pro-Bob Baffert, and the people that are anti-Bob Baffert will continue to be anti-Bob Baffert moving forward. If he wins,
good point.
People are going to be like, he's still doing something. If he's not winning, people will be like, see, he's not, you know. So I don't know where, I think his image is, it's an individual choice, right? How you view, how someone views Bob Baffert, I think that's already been determined. I don't know that he can do anything moving forward to change anybody's opinion. And I think he just, but it would be nice, I would think, for him to just move forward and, you know, get these horses that the owners have stayed, for the most part, with him. They've gone and purchased him nice horses, it seems like, at the sales. And I'm sure he would like nothing better to do on July 3rd, he can come back and, you know, get back around those horses and start preparing them for their careers. So the young horses, the 2-year-olds for the Del Mar meet and moving forward, and, you know, and just hopefully he's reinvigorated and, you know, or refreshed and wants to do it for his sake, you know, and not anything else. But I just don't think he's going to be changing, you know, people's perceptions of him one way or the other.
Well, same mindset. Dave, before we go and wrap it, I do want to give you a chance to explain what you heard regarding Echo Zulu. And midweek, you had the people have been waiting for a report from Rudin Riddle. You got the specifics of what might have contributed to her gate scratch.
Yeah, there's nothing. David Fisk, the racing manager for Ron Winchell, basically said that the horse was looked at by Larry Bramlett and Rudin Riddle and unremarkable. There was, you know, nothing stood out. There's no tears. There's no something that says, "Wow, you got to just, you know, pull back and don't, you know, give her 90 days or anything like that." So they sent her back to Churchill and Steve, and she's going to walk at the Shed Row for a few weeks, and then they'll put her back in light training and make sure they don't compound anything. But there's nothing clearly evident that says, we need to stop. He said she might have a little bit of a strain, not a tear, but a strain on the suspensory. And, you know, some rest would do her some good, and she's been getting that. And you look, it's 2 weeks already since that race, so probably, I don't know, get another four weeks, maybe. I didn't get it specific on that. And then they'll try and start her in light training and see if they can maybe get her back for a fall campaign, or if it compounds the issue, then I guess they'd have to stop on her. But it doesn't seem like it's anything, you know, major. And that's good news. But, you know, you'd like to see her back if she could to have a few more races at least this year.
Very good, Dave. I appreciate it. And I think the next time we talk, it'll be Belmont Week, Saratoga opening week. I'm off here for 10 days, and we'll do our meet preview. It's hard to believe, but we're already less than 3 weeks away.
Unbelievable. Where are you going? Going anywhere good?
We're going to Cancun tomorrow.
Wow, that's nice. That's nice.
This is a trip that we bought at a fundraiser 3 years ago. And every time we tried to schedule it, the pandemic kept pushing it back. So we were running out of racetrack. We had to use it. We had to actually book it, they said, by July 1st of this year. So, all right, I guess we better go.
Very nice. Well, leave the phone when you leave the phone in the hotel room and just go to the pool or the beach or the club or whatever and enjoy yourself.
I appreciate it, Dave, and we'll catch up here over by the racing office for the big meet preview.
I can wait, but I guess I can't wait.
I love it. Dave Grenig, everybody. DRF Grenig and all your action for another couple of weeks yet at Belmont Park, including, of course, I don't know if we do we still call it the Stars and Stripes Festival? Sort of. Still some good racing, including tomorrow with the Mother Goose. All right, James Scully is going to join us, and will take us to the top of the hour. Then we've got Hammer. We're going to get Rich Eng in here because I got to catch up and do a little Santa Anita wrap up and get the Rich Eng's end of the first half of the season thoughts. Chris Hyde is going to swing through with a quick update. There was good news yesterday. Not that it wasn't expected, but the subcommittee that is dealing with the SAFE Act, they had their session yesterday, the markup session, and things went pretty swimmingly. So Chris Hyde will provide another update. The House it'll get through the House, no problem. There were some other good little signs, little hints, apparently yesterday that Chris will elaborate on. But the Senate is going to be the key, and I suppose if they can get at least a gun, something of a gun control through like they did last night, we can get this SAFE Act through and end the pipeline forever of slaughter. James Scully standing by, Twin Spires weekend preview. James, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Always a pleasure to be on with you. I'll tell you, I was listening to Scott Shapiro earlier, and I got a little worried he was going to pick every horse I like tomorrow. But hey, he stole my thunder a little bit on some picks, but I've got a couple other ones.
Well, let's. I know you've got to be done by 11, so we got about 14, 15 minutes. Let's dive in. And did you look at Thistledown?
Yeah, I did. Absolutely. I looked at the two stakes, the last two races on the program.
Good.
The Lady Jacqueline. I thought that race, you know, to me, you know, you have some horses in there, Crazy Beautiful. You know, in our last five starts, including three on dirt, you know, our best two efforts have come on turf and synthetics. And you got Maracuja, who's a grade one winner, but I really think Army Wife is the one to beat in there. I thought that was a solid effort at last time. I mean, it was okay, but last year in her first stakes attempt of the season, she ran third, and then she came back and won the Black Eyed Susan next time out by a few lengths. So I look for Army Wife to prove tough in the Lady Jacqueline.
Let me I'm digging through. There we go. There's Lady Jacqueline. And one thing that's interesting about these races, you know, typically a lot of times when we go to these regional derby days, this is for older. This is for fillies and mares. But it's a mile and an eighth, and as is the Ohio Derby itself, not a mile and a sixteenth. So that kind of enters into this. Maracuja owns a win at the distance, as does Army Wife. It was one thing that I noted. The only other horse in here that has won at 9 furlongs was Micro Cap for Grant Forster. And in fact, coming off of a mile and eighth win at Churchill in a good second level allowance. I Army Wife was high on my list, and it's funny. I printed out without odds, and I was hoping maybe she would, you know, be a tick higher or two, but she's not. 3-1, and the Crazy Beautiful 7-2. Take Charge Lauren is 9-2, 4-1 on Maracuja. Micro Cap for Forster, I mentioned, 8-1. Among the locals, what did you think of Candlelight Hours?
Well, I mean, she's going to, you know, I think she's going to be a pace presence, you know, stretched out to two turns last time or stretched back out to two turns. But the thing I like about her is she's won her last two starts at a route. And that last effort was pretty strong. I mean, she's going pretty good right now. Three-year-old filly, you know, taking on Elders. But she's run, you know, won a couple races against Elders so far. So, you know, she's intriguing. She looks to be improving. It is a big class check for her.
Oh, no doubt. And she doesn't have to have the lead either. I mean, she's got, what's interesting is she's got sprint speed, but when you look back at that Galbraith win at Mahoning Valley, that kind of a performance, I mean, granted, the figure doesn't make her a contender then, but the race two back does. She's a interesting option at 8-1.
Yeah, and I'm open for a little bit. I thought that pace last time, Army Wife came back in that Shawnee, and I just didn't think, you know, I thought, boy, it was really middling, like, you know, internal fractions in that race. And, you know, I'm hoping for her to get a little bit of a better trip. Looking at the...
That's the Lady Jacqueline, yeah.
Yeah, and I expect both those races have solid paces. In the Ohio Derby, really the thing about the Ohio Derby is this presence of Pineapple Man, who looks like he's going to guarantee a solid pace in here. You'll have Classic Causeway. You know, he didn't break well in the Derby, but ran pretty solid for 11th. And the way he broke in the Tampa Bay Derby and even in the Sam F. Davis, you know he can get out of the gate. So he should be up close. Wide of Barrio, he's listed as the second choice on the morning line, but it would be easy for me to see him going favored, considering he was 15-1 in the Kentucky Derby off those wins in the Florida Derby and Holy Bull. And he's a colt that I would expect to be stalking just behind the leaders, looking to make a run at the lead on the far turn. I think the race is going to set up well for like a progressing type, you know, who could finish in here. I think you have two candidates. One of them's Ethereal Road, and I mean, obviously he's got a bullet work in preparation, but here's a horse that has missed two starts here in the last 2 months, just, you know, because of, you know, he was going to run in the Belmont Stakes, and he was reportedly scratched due to a quarter crack, and they entered him in the Derby, and they scratched him the morning before. So I'm going to go – I'm going to side with Tawny Port. And the thing I think about Tawny Port is that he's a horse to me that – after his first two wins on that synthetic track at Turfway Park over the winter, he was sort of thrown to the wolves in the Risen Star. He ran pretty well that day to split the field in fifth, and he just has continued to progress since then. Now, granted, his speed ratings need to sort of catch up, but I think they're certainly eligible to, and he just looks like he's stamped his readiness in his workout tab. You know, it just appears to be trim. I mean, I've heard people up there at Churchill talking about how forwardly he's been training for Cox. So I think he's a horse that has, like, big upside. And like I said, I think his speed ratings are really eligible to increase significantly in his upcoming starts. And I look for a good setup for Tawny Port.
Tawny Port seems to make the most sense as you go through this. And 3-1. I suppose you know, Classic Causeway and Pineapple Man, they're gonna vie a little bit. You know, there's a couple of things happening with Baris that are probably worth noting, and not the least of which is Carmouche making the trip to ride, and the additional Lasix, which is an option, of course, in Ohio, and I think Baris,
he's eligible to sit a good ground-saving trip, and his effort in the Wood Memorial is certainly very respectable. He's stretching back out to two turns, had a inside draw, perhaps just not the best of trip. You would have liked to have seen him still finish in that last race, but, you know, I think you can make a little bit of an excuse for it, and you pointed out the Lasix, you know, angle, and he's a horse to me. I don't know if he can win, but I think he could hit the board with a good trip. Like I said, you know, rallying from mid-pack.
Yeah, I'm using them. I'm using them at least as a B. All right, so there's the two. Let's go back, I suppose, to Churchill and get your thoughts on the Chicago.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the Chicago, first off, you know, Penny Baker, I'm gonna go ahead and pick Penny Baker. I've got some concerns in there. It's going to be the thing with Lady Rocket, I think people are going to be betting Lady Rocket because they're going to be looking at her as lone speed. And whether that happens or not, I mean, I do think that Calypso, you know, can at least put a little, you know, put some pressure on her. Byerness, it looks like she's real sharp right now for DeBow. You know, even Four Graces coming off a solid effort. I'll echo some of Scott's points. Wisconsin's 1-for-8 at the distance. I'm not saying she can't win at 7 furlongs, but I think she's just a little bit better at 6 or 6.5 furlongs, and she's losing a regular rider. Bell's the one. I'm just worried she's not sharp enough, and I think she's gonna, you know, she's gonna get bet down some. And the thing with Penny Baker, this is a filly who, her dam, Macaroon, who's a full sister to Frosted, she won on the turf. She was a turf horse herself, so I could understand why the connections ran her at first on the grass in France, but she couldn't run a step on the turf, Steve. When they switched her to synthetic track, she won her next 4 races in France by 15 combined lengths. And Scott referenced that Heavenly Cause. Kelly Riley had mentioned it to Vance and myself at work coming up on that Saturday about this Penny Baker. And I watched that race live, and I watched the replay again yesterday, and I just thought that was a wow performance. I thought that filly absolutely is just coming into her own right now. And if she works out a trip from post two, I think she's got a big chance to run well in here. You know, you look at her female family, and along with Frosted and Midshipman and all these other, most of those stakes winners on that classy female family are dirt stakes winners. It makes sense to me that she's like going to be way better on dirt than she was, you know, earlier in her career. And this, the price is right, you know, 8-to-1 on the morning line, you're going to get every bit of a fair price.
Well, the more we all jump on her, though, the less that 8-to-1 is gonna look. All right, I hear you. What else?
And I'll whip through just a couple real quick because I do have a last second Friday. I'm going to mention in race two, it's going to be a short price, but I'm watching this number 6 Key of Life, Brad Cox. Motown, you know, a little up and under the radar, unsung freshman sire, already has a couple winners, horse that ran fourth in the stake. This horse was the second leading top seller for Motown. His horses didn't even sell that well at auction, per se, comparable to others. $350,000 for this filly. She's working extremely well, it looks. Looks the part. I like another firster in race 7, the other 2-year-old maiden race, number 6, Veritable, for Cherie DeBow. She's training well by he's training well by Verrazano. I wanted to mention one thing. Scott mentioned Surveillance in race 8. Steve, this is Keith DeSormo's best category by a mile if you run down his trainer stats. He has a 27, from an 84 race sample, he has a 27% win rate with a positive, with a big positive ROI. This horse Surveillance has won going from dirt to turf this year. And that was not a bad third that day to Totally Boss in that allowance race on May 28th. You know he can win on, he went strung together multiple wins on the main track at Fairgrounds earlier this year. I think Surveillance looks really good in race 8. And in race number 10, I'll give one more on Saturday. Number 7, Angor. I like this 2021 finale. And I think his experience is going to show against a couple of these last out maiden winners. Number 3, Favorite Outlaw. Number 4, Top of the Charts. I like Angor at 8-to-1. Let me mention one thing real quick. Last second Friday pick, Steve, in the finale today at Churchill Downs. That you we have a horse coming in there. Let me pull this up. Number 4, Mountain Ghost, 15-to-1 morning line, ran April 24th at Keeneland in the best maiden claiming race of the entire year in the country. That race, the runner-up came back and won next start by 3.5 lengths. over maiden claiming rivals. The winner came back and won a 50K starter allowance at 32-1. The fifth place finisher has won two straight, won the next two races. Tiwanat Pass at Churchill. Eighth place finisher Poker Play won its next race. Tiwanat Pass ran fourth and won a maiden special weight after that effort. Mountain Ghost broke slowly that day, but showed decent tactical speed. First off, the claim here for Lon Wiggins. I'm taking him out of that key race. I'm going to do a trifecta key with him. He's 15-1 on the morning line. He's going to be a huge price with Francisco Arrieta.
I love it, and Lon Wiggins does a terrific job. That's great. The four in the nightcap tonight, 4:55, going to the weekend on a roll with James Scully, James_Scully, 111 on Twitter, and, of course, the Twin Spires blog roll here, weekend preview at the races, brought to you by Twin Spires. James, we will talk to you live from Indiana Grand. No, I almost did it. From Horseshoe, yeah. Indiana, 2 weeks from today. I'll be at Indy the night before the Indiana Derby card.
Have a great vacation, Steve.
I appreciate it. James Scully, everybody. And that is that. But I'm gonna put this up on Twitter, the race that he's talking about at Keeneland. Top of the hour is upon us. We're shockingly right on time. Going to check in with Hammer and get a couple of a couple of thoughts as the transition from Santa Anita to Los Al starts tomorrow. Should mention that they're underway, of course, on the fair circuit, Pleasanton, as the summer has arrived. And you know what else arrived from California? I think Frank Miramonte. I assume that Frank is in Jersey by now. He had a little trouble getting there, so I was thinking maybe we'd sneak in a quick hello from the Mirror Man. Hour three at the races as we get ready to take our mid-year break. Back after this. Stay with us.
The races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
Horse racing off to a fast start, but the University of Arizona's Racetrack Industry Program is your winning ticket. The Racetrack Industry Program has served as a springboard to some of the industry's most successful individuals, with a proven track record of job placement right out of college. If you want to earn a degree in the exciting horse racing industry, the Racetrack Industry Program can put you in the winner's circle.
Visit ua-rtip.org today.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they